This train is inbound.
From Sector C.
My crime is that of outsmarting you.
If you have not yet submitted your identity to the retinal clearance system.
Communications interface online.
You're not dealing with AT&T.
Automatic medical systems engaged.
Welcome to the internet, my friend. How can I help you?
Defensive weapon selection system activated. Have a very safe day.
It's like getting in character. Well, truth be told, not to make you feel bad, but I actually spent the whole day just digging around, aside from writing algorithms for my Arduino, saying, oh, thank God Enigma has it. I don't have to do anything all day. I can just show up and just be like, woo. So now I like, went to the pool and relaxed, and now I'm all out of my element.
So I threw you out of your element.
Yeah, you did. Anyway, that is from San Diego, California. I'm Trey Canubis.
And from sunny Florida, I'm Enigma.
How's it going, buddy?
Oh, not too bad. It's a little late again here on a Saturday, but not too bad. What have you been up to lately, Greg?
Oh, I've been working on a thing for the Arduino that I'll talk about probably next week. And other than that, it's been pretty chill. I did actually get one funny email from VMware where they invited me to register for VMworld 2010. Have you heard about this?
Yeah, the one in San Francisco.
The one, the very one. Did you get the same email?
No, I got the one from Oracle World, which is actually at the same event.
That's so lame. Who would go to Oracle World? It's like I can understand going to really, really specific conferences, like, you know, Torcon's really specific, but like Ogfest or, you know, Linksfest Northwest is really specific. But why would you go to VMworld? It's just a bunch of people standing around going, oh, isn't it great that VMware 10.6.4b now supports 256 USB devices? And I'll be like, oh, great, because I was really hitting that 128 limit. That was really a ceiling for me. Like, that's, well, that's all this conference is.
Well,
you know, the new VMware.
To put a business sense into it, Java 1 is also at that same location. So they do, I think, VMworld, Java 1, and Oracle World are all at that same, in that same area, in San Francisco. So one of our developers is a Java developer, and he's going to Java 1. And
what do they have to say at Java 1? Yeah, you still can't actually write once and run anywhere, but it's close.
No, it's like they
next
have,
year for sure.
They have like talks, like a DEF CON or a TorCon or whatever, on specific Java stuff. I don't know. I'm not a Java developer, but
okay, I suppose that's interesting. But you can't be a VMware developer. So all the talks must just be like, look at all the new USB devices we support.
No. So VMworld would be more like, you know, configuring and networky kind of things.
VMworld.
So, yeah, one of our admins is heavy into the VM side of things. So he was interested in VMworld, but work isn't paying for that, so I don't think
it's
he's
like
going.
A bad movie.
So hey,
it's like Zombieland.
If work paid for me to go to Oracle World, I would be there in a second.
Oracle World, that must be so lame. New exciting queries.
No, it's more of how you get your database to run faster, better. You know. It's like the bionic.
You know, with this new command line faster, Oracle's now 8% faster. Oh, thank you, Oracle.
It's kind of like, you know, the Bionic Man, you know, make them bigger, stronger, faster, whatever.
Yeah, but it's a whole database. The databases just aren't that exciting, no matter how you cut it.
Yeah, it's different. I'm getting more of into the database-y side of things at work. I'm doing some things with getting into the reporting and database maintenance at work. So I've been working a lot with SSRS, which is SQL Server Reporting Services. Have you ever heard of it?
Vaguely. Just hold on a second. All my lights just turned off, and now I'm in the dark.
I knew you were in dark a long time ago.
So back to the fascinating world of SQL databases.
All right. So have you heard of SSRS?
Vaguely.
All right. Well, it's this whole, you know, and I'm sure I'm going to get so much hate mail for this because I'm supporting a Microsoft product.
Oh, no one emails. The only person that emailed the show was 5150, who sent a really nice note, and I should give him a shout-out for that. But continue.
5150? Who's 5150?
There's some guy. Right. Really nice, though.
Some guy. All right. Anyway, back to my thing. So it's this whole suite of tools that are around reporting, you know, creating reports in SQL off of any type of or ODBC connection. So you can talk to Oracle, you can talk to SQL Server, you can talk to a Microsoft Access database, which we actually have one in production.
Maybe you can clarify this. I've heard that the Microsoft Access is basically just like Microsoft's, like basically just SQL, but in like a file format.
Yes.
Oh, okay, that's interesting.
Yeah, it's basically a very bad implementation of
SQL,
a database.
Right?
Yeah, and yeah, it's bad. So
okay,
yeah.
but not for you because you have this exciting new software.
Yeah. Well, we had a guy that was the SSRS guy that did all the reporting, and anyway, he's leaving us for better opportunities and
for a real job.
Yeah, for a real job. We're just, you know, a bunch of monkeys around there. But anyway,
how do you end up being an SRS guy? Like that's all you do.
Anyway, so it's kind of like. It's a stripped down Visual Studio, so you have a lot of the functionality of Visual Studio in this reporting software. And I might go into it a little more in depth when I know a little more. But right now, I'm just kind of taking what he has developed and kind of playing with it a little bit and trying to get what I need done. But it's a very object oriented reporting tool. So you can create a query to talk to an ODBC database and get your results and display them in the manner that you would want to display them in and create, you know, pie charts, graphs, pretty little things that make the upper management go wow. But anyway.
Couldn't you do that anyway though? Like I thought that was like whenever I do an interaction with MySQL, it's always a query. Isn't it just like querying this or
right, but the nice part about SSRS is it can be in an automated fashion. So it has a web server. So basically the way we have it set up is we have this reporting service on a web server, and this web server does all of the number crunching and then displays the reports. So we have this intranet page where we can go and click on a report, it generates it, and we can also do where it generates the report and emails us every, you know, week, let's say, or every day or whatever we wanted to do. So it makes report generation automated. So.
So this is like that there's a thing like magic reports or like quick reports or something. There's another product just like this that probably is the direct competitor that is actually really kind of badass. Maybe where you can take like all these data sources and it will like basically do exactly what you said, like run the automated queries and such. Okay, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, this is just Microsoft's version and it's geared more toward reporting on SQL servers. So, but you can use it on any ODBC connection. So we're primarily an Oracle shop, so we have it talking to an Oracle database.
I see. But you're not going to attend Oracle World?
I am not going to attend Oracle World only because they're not paying for it. I'd be there in a second. I'd be there in a second if they would pay for it.
I need like some Carnival mirrors. Like, step right up and check out Oracle World. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. That's what it sounds like.
That's just wrong.
See the three-headed database. Ooh, ah.
Oh, man. So, anyway. So
the world's tallest midget. Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, that's basically what I've been doing. I've been working a lot. This is my first day off in, like, 3 weeks. So I've been taking
world's
it off.
Shortest giant. Well, that's cool. That's good.
So, anyway, and I know I ditched you for the show topic tonight, so, you know.
Enigma has something so great that it wasn't ready in time for this week, so I had to scramble and figure out something. So I'm just going to tell you some stories. I need like a stories around the campfire jingle.
No, it's story time with Drake.
Story time with Drake. Yeah, that's what it is. I do actually have two stories that I'd love to tell. There's one I'm just going to make up because it's too illegal to be true. So any vague resemblance to reality in the first story is just coincidental.
Okay.
And the second story is actually true, which happened at TourCon, which is where we rigged the candy corn guessing contest. You know, one of those contests, like, how many candy corn are in the jar? Win a pony or whatever. And we rigged that, so we won. But The first story is actually more interesting.
So you didn't have any turning the pool purple stories like a DEFCON a few years ago?
No, I have a story about a hacker conference and a story about a pool, but nothing combining the two.
Dang it. All right, okay.
The pool thing, which would be especially interesting if it happened, but let me make that absolutely clear that it never happened. But the I'll tell it from the perspective from me as if it happened, so you can, it'll be a fun story, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So there's this pool by my house that my friends and I like to go to, but it closes at 11, which is a problem because we go in the late evening, like around midnight. Mind you, we don't cause any problems or make any noise or anything. In fact, we usually just sit in the jacuzzi, but we all have like jobs and classes and stuff, so we just can't be there much before 10:30.
May I interject for a second?
Yes, and interject as much as you want. We need to fill time.
You don't have a job, so
I did when this happened, even though it never happened right. Because it's not real. But that's when I was still doing consulting work.
You theoretically did have a job at that.
Yeah, if I had done this, I would have had a job. But so there's a pool area, and it's just, you know, it's like a typical pool, and it's controlled by RFID tags that are assigned to everyone in the community. And if you're not familiar with RFID, it's basically you have this little IC, which is an integrated circuit or like a small chip, if you will, and it's just attached to a coiled wire that serves as an antenna. When you put the card near the reader, which is always constantly broadcasting, it will use the actual RF power from the reader to energize the card, and then the card can transmit its own little signal back. And most of the RFIDs, at least the cheap ones, are passive, where they rely entirely on power from the reader. But there are also active ones, which have their own battery, and like semi-active or battery-assisted ones that use both, but that doesn't matter. Point being, the RFID reader gets the number from the card, and it passes on to this dedicated controller that checks to see if the card should have access, and if it does, it will engage the door lock and open the door. But after hours, it's set to deny any card that isn't in like the management or security group, and if you're thinking, oh, well, that's obvious, you just gotta move your card into the management or security group, or duplicate a card that's in the management or security group, and then you're in. Well, that would work, I'm sure, but it creates an audit trail that I was trying to avoid. And there is actually a magical third option that you can abuse to get these doors to unlock. And that's, it's called different things in different systems, but it's essentially an override. There's actually a way that you can get these doors to unlock without leaving any logs in the system. It's usually used for emergency purposes, but also for testing purposes. And it's, you can trigger it either at the actual controller itself, or usually it's an option in the management software, because the way you manage these doors, with most units anyway, is that you have some computer that's hooked up to some serial cable that actually goes to the dedicated hardware controller, and you program things on the computer, and then it will sync with the controller. It's very rarely a single computer actually doing all the controls, because it's faster for a dedicated piece of hardware to do it. So, I figured I couldn't get access to the actual dedicated hardware unit itself, but this particular place happened to have a router that was vulnerable to a particular attack that lets you gain SSH access after you give it an invalid URL string. So I did that, and then I had the SSH access on the router, which was not as useful as I thought it would be. And this place is not a class act, so the router wasn't telling me anything important about where I could find such a computer that might manage such a dedicated hardware unit. And this machine wasn't showing up in an Nmap scan, and I'm not an Nmap pro, but it wasn't showing me anything worthwhile. What did show up, though, was one of these large industrial copy machines. You know the type I'm talking about? They're like huge and expensive and do all kinds of things?
Mm-hmm.
One of those showed up, and I talked to it, and it had a web interface. And the password could be anything, but it wasn't. It was the default password, so I was able to look at the web interface. And I was just kind of thumbing through the tabs, and I remember the print spool logs didn't say anything helpful. The fax was not applicable. It would tell me the IP address of who was logged into the web interface, but that was only me, which was actually a problem I had to go back and clear later, because your router shouldn't be logging into your copier. But on a whim, I found that it had an FTP server, and that's, you know, people actually said, why would the copier have an FTP server? Or actually, it's really common if, let's say, one of the desktops has a scanner, you can set it to automatically scan to the FTP, and then, say, automatically print anything in the FTP, or sometimes you can save documents to FTP and get them later. It's just, that's a handy feature to have, but
mm-hmm.
Sure enough, there was actually a small storage space. It was like 128 meg or something on an SD card where it had all the files stored. And right next to that was a list of all the computers that owned each file. And one of them was called Manager PC. And I was like, oh, pff, praise the Lord, there it is. Because Manager PC was a host name, so even though I had no idea what the IP address was, which actually turned out to be really bizarre, so I'm not ashamed that I couldn't find it, I could just hit the host name. And more importantly, it was the Manager's PC, which means... Well, it doesn't mean, but managers are usually not the most technically savvy people, and they usually have weak passwords like password, and I find that they always forget to turn their computer off, and this was kind of self-explanatory, but Manager PC is a convention that Windows will use to name things. Like, if your username is, you know, Drake Anubis, it will suggest, well, do you want to name your computer Drake Anubis PC when you're setting it up? So, now I knew that was Windows, but that was pretty obvious, even though it could have been Mac, I suppose, but it's probably Windows in the office environment. But I also had his username, or her username, I suppose, which was also really helpful, too, or at least it ended up being helpful. Oh, and I should point out, by the way, you would expect to find the IP addresses in the router, but I couldn't find it because this particular computer had a static IP address, so it wasn't showing up in DCHP, the DCHP tables. So
DHCP.
DHCP, thank you. Dynamic host something protocol?
Control protocol.
Thank you. See, this is why I keep you around, because you're on the ball today.
Thank you. Yeah. I know you were spending too much time at the pool, but I got it.
Ugh, God. Well, I spent the time before that working on it. I'll go into it later. But anyway, so I was like really excited that I found this. I'm like, oh man, I bet I can ping this shit. And sure enough, I pinged it right in the face. And I was like, what? And I was like really getting into this. And mind you, I'm like sitting there on my laptop outside of this like office complex. And like there's like an actual park right there, and kids are like tossing a beach ball around, and some kids like, "Hey mister, you want to play tag?" I'm like, "No kid, I'm saving the world. Get lost." Okay. Or something like that, you know, and I'm trying to act all nonchalant. My mind's like, "Oh man, there's probably like a billion Metasploit packages for this. I know some people I can call, or God help me if it's like an unpatched Windows XP machine where you can just look at it funny and it'll just tell you all of its secrets."
So, yes, it will. Yes, it will.
Yeah, it will. So I ended up setting up an SSH tunnel, which is really cool, where I specify a port on my local machine, and that same port is specified on whatever I'm SSHing into. So if I hit a port on my laptop, it forwards to the router and then comes out of the router as if my laptop was plugged into their network. It's called a port tunneling or port forwarding. But I bound this to port 3389, and I was hitting it with radmin. Do you happen to know the significance of port 3389 offhand?
I do not.
Take a guess. What do you think the most valuable port would be to hit on a machine you're trying to get access to?
RDP?
That's the one. That's 3389 has been the default RDP port since, like, Windows 2000 or NT or something.
Oh, wow, you actually taught me something today, because I didn't know the...
Yeah, fun trivia. Do you know what NT stands for?
I do not.
New technology.
Oh yeah, I knew that. I just
I read that in a book called this is how lame I am. I have a book called Showstoppers: The Breakneck Race to Create Windows NT and the Next Generation at Microsoft.
And why did you read this book?
It's a really exciting book. It's actually really funny how they managed to create Windows NT.
Okay. All right. Okay, moving on.
So I hit this port, if I had actually done this, which I didn't, but I hit the port, and sure enough, it bounces back, our admin does, with one of those blue default Windows login prompts saying that you have the wrong password, which was great. Well, not that I had the wrong password, but it was great that it worked, which means that RDP was running on the target machine, and the default password was just because it logged in blank without me specifying it. And I had the manager's username, which was manager, from the host name of the computer. So it only took me a couple minutes to try reasonable passwords. It turned out to be the password that was actually the number of the suite in the office building where the management complex was, so that wasn't too hard to figure out. And on his desktop, which was actually either really clean or he never actually used this computer, which is possibly more probable, was this icon that looked like a door and had the name of the company who was on the key card, so that was very clearly the controller. I mean, it was like right there. It was like jackpot.
Thank you very much. May I have another?
I'm sure he never even, or he or she, but it might have been she, never even actually used it because, you know, I'm sure they have some underling that manages this, but they might want to feel the power and have it right there. So I opened this up, and it asked me for a login prompt, and I tried, you know, admin password, the manager's credentials that worked before, and nothing was going. And I was thinking, well, I could do a key logger or social engineer or something, or I don't know, the application looks stupid. It probably just stores the password in a text file somewhere or something, or a registry key. But I ended up finding the actual owner's manual to the thing online, And it had a section on how to reset your password. And in this section, like printed in the, well, this was a PDF, but it would have been printed in the manual, was essentially a root password or a super user password to this system that was like, it was complicated to change this password. And it was just like, I forget what the actual thing was. But you type this in, and this is like the highest level you can have in this thing. Your account doesn't leave logs. You can disable any account you want. You have unfettered access to anything. It was like insane. It was great.
Mm-hmm.
But this was like, anyway, the application was fantastic. It automatically synced with the hardware controller, and it started displaying every name in the system, every card number, logs. You could do almost real-time views of every door in the area, so you could watch people walk in and out of things, doors click open and click closed. You could see who had elevated privileges, when they were used, when people were going into places where you wouldn't expect them to be. It was really actually kind of cool.
That would have been really handy.
But more importantly, it had what I was looking for in the first place, which was what they called a live control panel that lets you select any door and specify a state. So you can use it for emergency unlock or emergency lockdown. But in my case, you could say, you know, pool door and press the obnoxiously big open button, and it would just keep the door open. It would just hold it open until you hit the close button. And with no trace. Hypothetically,
could you have set it on a timer where you had it pop open at a particular time on a particular day?
Yes, you could have, because that's how they controlled the people getting in and out. They had timers that said, after this hour, keep it closed unless, you know, this event occurred, and the event was if you see management or if you see security or someone else. But yeah, you could have, but that would have been in the group section, and I thought that they might try that, or I would have thought this if this had happened. So I played with this feature, and you can actually open and close doors without creating what's called a card event, because no card was present. The door just opened and closed because you told it to. There was no log of this, because nothing actually logs the physical movement of the latch, just whether or not a card tripped it or not.
Right.
So with some hypothetical bouncing and routing, I had the ability to access a remote computer on my iPhone, and that remote computer was remote desktoping into this computer, and what I would do is I could hold my card up to the reader. It would say denied. I could tap the button on my phone. The reader wouldn't make any noise, but you could, you know, silently pull the door open because it was holding the lock back, and the reason you held up your card was for what's called plausible deniability. So if you ever get stopped by security, you could say, oh, I don't know, I held my car up and the reader made a funny noise, but then the door opened, so I thought it was okay. And if they check the logs, they'll say, yeah, there was the card and the door opened. That's weird. But if you hadn't done this and like you got caught, they look at the logs and say, well, that's funny. No one ever swiped their card to get in. That's kind of strange. And you don't want to be like a ghost in the pool, so you have to make it look like it was a system error. You see what I'm saying?
Right, yeah, yeah. So, and it would always, you know, look kind of funny on the camera if you just like tapped your phone and the
yeah, exactly.
Opened.
There were no cameras anywhere in the area, but there was one further in. It wouldn't have seen anything now that I think about it, but because it was actually kind of hypothetically, it would have been looking for people smoking pot by the bathroom, I think, but no, it was the whole thing worked out very, very well, and I was just surprised how complex these door systems were.
Yeah, I used to, another story for another day, but I used to work for a correctional facility, and we had fun with the door controls. And
Just out of curiosity, what was the company name that provided you those doors?
I could probably look. I don't remember off the top of my head.
Okay, probably, now that I think about it, it probably wasn't the one I'm thinking of, because they service, I think, Southern California only, so never mind. Actually, I don't know. We'll talk about this later off show.
All right, we'll talk.
But anyway, I thought that was kind of cool. The second story I have, which is a lot.
Well, can I interject a couple of short?
Yes, interject all the way.
All right. Well, I have a couple of. Now that you've been telling story time, I'll tell a couple of stories.
Oh, story on time, mine. Uncle Enigma.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, you turned a thought when you said that copier.
Yeah,
that copier in your story. So my fun. Back in college, and this was technically sort of legal, like, they knew I was doing it, so...
So it maybe kind of happened?
So it did happen, it's just, you know, it was all above board. I was in an ethical hacking class, so...
No.
You know, I was toying around on the network. Anyway, I was bored one day, I actually audited the ethical hacking class a couple times when I was in college, because I was bored. And I knew the teacher very well, so I just kind of screwed around in the back of class while they were working. Anyway, so these big laser jet printers that they have in some of colleges. Just the desktop LaserJet, like the HP like LaserJet. I don't remember the model number. Anyway,
is this story going to go into LCD screens by any chance?
It is going to go into LCD screens.
Okay.
So, do you remember Iron Geek's thing he did a while ago with Freaknik, where he changed like LED screens?
Yeah, I vaguely remember something regarding Iron Geek, and I remember it was on Paul.com too for a while. And I remember that there were certain HP printers you could change the LCD screen to anything you wanted. And I would always change. Man, this was a long time ago. I would always change the ones in my high school to say "insert 25 cents" and throw people off.
Well, I did the whole "I am God" thing. But
that's pretty good.
Anyway, so I just wanted to mention a couple things about HP printers because they're really cool to play with.
Yes.
You can telnet to the if it has port 9100 open, which is it's the protocol these printers use. PCL.
PCL.
PCL and PJL. You can telnet to these, and usually they have no password protection whatsoever on it. So you just telnet to the port, and you can send commands to the printer.
Oh, PCL. That's printer command language.
Yes.
When you said command, I thought of it.
Yeah, PCL. So, like, if you telnet to that port and send commands to it, most of the time, if there's no username and password on it, you can, you know, just send random commands to this printer.
Like one.
You can well. First off, you can print from command line, which is kind of cool.
Well, hello or something.
Yep. You can do that.
Is it really? That's cool.
Yeah, you can type a little message, send it to the printer, and it'll print it out, which is kind of. You can also cat your entire hard drive to the printer, which not saying that I ever did that, but it's theoretically possible.
Oh, so it will just like start spewing anything you put there.
Oh yeah.
Oh.
So like catting your entire hard drive, not saying that I ever did this, but
no, that'd be wrong. Only a mean person would do that.
Or if you did it from multiple machines at the same time would be really wrong.
The printer must just crash after that. It can't.
Yeah. It you can basically DOS a printer that way.
Because it only has so much buffer.
Yes. You can override the buffer.
That's supposed to
happen. Anyway, you can also change the little like we talked about, the little display screen to say whatever. Mm. Although that isn't as cool as you would think, because all they have to do is turn the printer on, turn the printer back off, and it clears it.
Yeah.
It's only stored in RAM.
You would be surprised, well, maybe not in office, but you'd be surprised how many high school students don't want to touch the power button of anything, though.
True.
Librarians for that matter.
Well, like I was toying around with this and I showed they have a little student admin at my college, and I was screwing with him one day, and I changed it, and I said, come here and take a look at this. And he saw it and smirked at me, and then he's like, well, how are you going to fix it? And I shake my shoulders, and he's like, and he turns it off and turns it back on, and I was kind of depressed, because I was like all proud, and it's that easy.
Should have written like a bash script or something.
Yeah, well, if I ever get back to it, it's got to be stored. That information has got to be stored somewhere on the hard drive. Like somewhere it's got to exist where it says ready. So if you could overwrite that make it always say that.
I bet you it's in the firmware somewhere. You could probably get a copy of the firmware modified. Actually, you could probably just run through it with hex and look for ASCII string. ASCII string.
You could probably do that. But anyway, another topic or the other thing I wanted to talk about with these printers is they have surprisingly large hard drives. I believe the one I was toying around with had something to the realm of 20 gig of space. Yeah.
Okay, you're talking about like hard drive space and not RAM, because I've seen printers with RAM that's like up to like 512 megabytes, but never hard drive
space. No, hard drive space.
Why?
These are the network printers. They store the jobs on the hard drive.
I want to print, but just not right now. Maybe in a couple weeks.
Well, you can save print jobs. It might have been 10 gig. I don't know. It was
any gig. Give me a use case scenario.
I don't know. I don't know why this would ever be existence, but they have surprisingly large hard drives. So they also have a web server.
Mm-hmm.
in most of these network printers.
Yeah, for like admin and such, yeah.
Most of them are not protected password-wise. You can just, you know, go to the web page and do whatever. So theoretically, you have this file server sitting on your network with, you know, X number of space.
Sure.
So you could theoretically hide files there that you didn't want anyone to know about, because who's going to think about looking at the printer's hard drive?
That's not bad.
So, thank you. I try. Not saying that I ever do such things, but, no. You know, hypothetically, you could store information there and no one would ever know the wiser.
Well, I wonder if you could set up like iSCSI and boot from it. You almost probably could.
Probably could. That's never something. Tried it. But anyway. Slow. So, my second story is, you know, going into like some apartment complexes, you have the little keypads.
I'm familiar with the keypads.
For the gates?
Yes.
You know they're controlled by DTMF tones, right?
Yeah, what's his name? He gave a talk at TorCon like a year or two ago. Who's that guy we both know? Savant.
Savant? Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know he gave a talk about this. But anyway, my story, hypothetically, this one is very hypothetical because it involves...
very hypothetical? That's like being very pregnant.
An emergency vehicle tone. So a lot of the gate controls have an override. So yes. You would have like all the emergency vehicle has to do is like chirp their horn and it'll open.
Quick so side thing, a lot of them have what are called MERTs or opticoms, which are things that look for a certain flashing light pattern, which will tie into what I'll talk about eventually later.
Okay.
Yes, but not today.
Anyway, so hypothetically, you could get a tone from an emergency vehicle, go up to the said device, and play it back, and it'll open the gate.
Yeah, I bet it would. I've heard that you can even, that some of them, like, you know how you can, in some places, call an apartment and say, oh, yeah, hey, Sally, it's me, open the door. And she can press, like, 3 on her phone and the door will open.
Yeah.
I've heard that in sometimes you can actually just, like, hit 3 on your cell phone, and if it actually makes a DTMF tone and not just a generic tone, that it would just hear that and then open the door.
Oh, that's cool. I've heard that sometimes. I'll have to try that. Yeah. They're also very, you know, you don't even have to go to that extent. Most of them are just a standard keypad, and you can pretty much guess. Like, in my apartment complex, it's 4-digit and a pound. So if you know the combination, you can pretty much, you know, brute force it and get in. I mean, I used
1, 2, 3, and 4 are all blank keys, all rubbed off from being pressed too much. That's weird.
Well, no, I used to use 1, 1, 1, 1 or 4 1s, and it would get me in. So I have a code, but I would intentionally not use the code to see how many codes I could get, and I had like 2 or 3.
That's not bad. You know, this never happened either, but one time I didn't get access to someone's voicemail. Just by accident, just like dialing 2580, which is right down the center of the keypad.
So
you know, this is never going to work.
So this is like a Paris Hilton email story?
Kind of. Although okay. That was done with spoofing caller ID, but that's different. On a side note, I just found that you can buy a hard drive for an HP printer that's 80 gig, and it comes built with a 128-bit AES encryption.
See? Exactly.
Doesn't make it okay. It makes it, you know how much this thing, oh my god, this thing costs $700.
So you're busting on me for saying I had a 10 gig. Like, why would you ever need a 10 gig printer? And there's an 80 gig.
Oh my god, what is a 70 divided by 80? That's got to be like, oh my god, that's like $10 a gig.
It's gotta write, you know, the jobs. Like, if you save a job, it's gotta write it somewhere, so it's gonna write it to disk. So if you have a very large
if you send it a job, it's writing to RAM.
No, but I'm saying if you save the job, like you can save a print job on a printer.
I can't imagine why you'd want to do that.
I don't know why you would want to do that either. I can't think of a practical application, but yes, theoretically, you know, it's a very large file server sitting on the network, basically unprotected and kind of cool.
Well, not this one. This one's the HP Secure Disk. It's protected. Well, I guess when it's plugged in, it's not protected.
Okay, so when it's plugged in and you have access to the drive.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Now you have a secure file storage. So if anybody wanted to steal the hard drive, they couldn't get it. Couldn't get the data off. But
yeah,
Yeah, good times. Anyway, you can go into your story because I'm done.
Yeah, this reminds me of the story I was planning on telling anyway, which is related to last year's TorCon, which is it's like a miniature DEF CON in San Diego. It's just a hacker convention, and they had a guess how many candy corn are in the jar and win a pony or something contest. And I was there with Jolly. It was when something stupid, which I never got, by the way. I need to get on Geo's ass and see where my free thing is. Okay. But I was with Jolly from ajollylife.com, link in the show notes.
Okay, so that was a very shameless plug, by the way.
Just for a friend. You know, his website is not like, it's just bash scripts you might need. It's nothing worth plugging there, but he's just a really cool guy.
Okay. All right, I'll allow it.
And I was there with his brother. I'm glad I have your consent. I'll get you a stamp.
Thanks.
His brother, who's just this wicked cool guy, and I regret not having more time to spend with him, but so we're down there, and we're just kind of hanging out, and they approached me at one point, and they're like, oh, because I think I walked out of a talk or something. They stopped me in the hallway all shit. Like, dude, we took pictures of the candy corn thing. Let's go back. We'll do some, like, volumetric math, and we'll be able to calculate exactly how much is in there. And just, like, being a sarcastic ass, I'm like, why don't you just, like, switch the damn bottles? And they started cracking up and laughing, and I just kind of rolled with it, pretending it was actually my original idea. And then as we were walking, talking about it, the more we talked about it, the more it actually seemed plausible. Because we knew that it was a jar, a peanuts jar with, you know, the actual peanuts brand with peanuts in it, because of the way it was shaped and the glue residue, and it had some crumbs in the bottom that we identified as peanuts. We were walking around saying, like, do you know these crumbs? And people were like, oh yeah, those are peanut crumbs. I'm like, okay, it's peanuts. And so Jolly's brother, who lived in the area, was like, well, let's go to the store. And he actually suggested Albertsons, which was kind of farther away, but went to a closer store. They didn't have it, and we were kind of sweating. We're like, oh, man, we need to find this peanut. Because we either thought, well, they either bought the peanuts here or they came from some weird store somewhere else, which is, if I was doing this, I would have, if I had the option, I would have gotten the peanuts from the weirdest store I could find so that no one could do what we did. But we're like, okay, crap, we need to find this peanut jar. And I remember why we thought to get a separate jar. We thought to get a second jar because they're like, well, what if we can go find a matching jar, fill it with candy corn, and count that? And I said, well, if you're going to do that, why don't you just switch them? And that's why we had the idea. But anyway, so we're walking out of this, like, 7-Eleven or whatever, kind of sweating, like, oh, we got to find this thing. So as we're walking to my car, I'm calling people on the phone, like, man, do you have any peanuts? And they're like, no, Drake, I don't have any peanuts. I'm like, okay, fine. And then I found out later that one of my friends called another friend and said, I got this funny call from Drake. He was all freaked out asking for peanuts. And the guy's like, oh, what? Hold on, I'm having the call. It's me. Man, do you have any peanuts? No, Drake, I don't have any peanuts. Like, just doing that, just calling people all day. No one had a peanuts jar. But so we show up at Albertsons, which is this grocery store, and, like, burst in. And I should add that Jolly and his brother look like terrorists. Like, just imagine, like, a terrorist, and that's what Jolly looks like almost. He has the whole scraggly beard and everything.
Okay.
So we're running through the store, like, bolting for the peanut section. We're like, where is it? I think it's that way. Like, just running through the store. And the manager comes on and goes, oh, sweep all aisles. And sweep all aisles out at an Albertsons grocery store. It's a nationwide chain. Is code for there's a security problem, and I know this because a friend of mine used to work there. So they saw us run into the store saying, where is it? It's that way, and thought it was a security thing, but we ended up running down. We found jars that looked the same, and then we found jars that were the same. So we're pulling all the jars off the shelf, looking for the perfect matching jar, and we're going through photos saying, no, that jar's too weird, that jar's too funny. And we found one that not only was it a perfect match, it was the last one in the back, but we were matching these so closely that on the bottom, next to the Recycle logo embossed on the bottom of the jar, it has a number, which I'm guessing is the lot number, like they print, you know, this is lot 357 or 358, so quality control can go back and find it. But we found a jar that matched that lot number, because he had a picture of the jar at the bottom that had the lot number on it on his camera.
Jeez.
I'm like, oh. Yeah, that's how matched it was, and the glue was in the same spot and everything, like, perfect. So we ended up buying this. We bought some candy corn there, because we figured if they bought the jar, they must have bought the candy corn there too. And we go back to Jolly's brother's apartment, and it's not that I don't know Jolly's brother's name, but they're both named Jolly, so I have to distinguish between the two. So we're in his apartment, I don't know how late it was. And we're like dumping out the jar, and we're filling it up with candy corn, counting how many we put in. Then we go back to the convention center. I paid for parking again, I should point out. I must have spent like $1,000 on parking this weekend. But we go back there. Oh, a free tip. A friend of mine, because I was trying to, like, social engineer the parking guy to give me just a let me back in for free, and it didn't work out well. But if you want to get into a parking garage for free, because a friend of mine used to have this job, what you want to say is, I own this place, or a friend of mine owns this place, or a friend of mine owns a store in this place, I'm going to him. Because they almost never know who actually owns the restaurants there, but if you say you're the owner, they're supposed to let you in. So, free tip.
Okay, I'll remember that.
Yeah, but that's actually kind of valuable. You can say like $10 downtown in San Diego. But so we go down there, and we go up to the top thinking that somehow we can, like, switch the drives or something. And we end up talking to Vis, who's this really cool guy, and he's super shady in some respects. And he showed us how to actually palm a switch and switch the jars, right? Because we need to get their jar to count how many candy corn they had. And fortunately for us, Vis was actually the official staff photographer. So he goes, okay, and the candy corn jar is right there in front of everyone, so you can't do this kind of shit. And he goes, okay, everyone, we need a group picture. Everyone, look this way. Over here. And moves, like, way off to one side. Everyone turns to look at him. And then right on cue, Jolly makes the switch twice and gets the two things confused. And Jolly's like, oh, fuck, which one is it? So we run over and we're arguing about it. And Vis is like, okay, I need one more. Wait. Everyone, look this way. I need one more. Hold on. Framing it. Still framing it. Like, looking at this, like, what the? And Vis, I have to give Vis some serious props. I made it sound like he was being, like, overdramatic about that, but he was really slick. No one turned around. We got it sorted out. We got away from there. And to give Jolly credit, I probably couldn't have done much better. But it's funny because in the actual pictures he was taking, cause he was really taking pictures. You can see us in the background, like just Jolly. Then we run over, like, oh, fuck, what do we do? And then you see us gone, just the one candy corn sitting in a different position. It's really funny. I'll have to post the pictures in the show notes if I can get them from Jolly. But so we have their jar. We go back down to my car. And we're just sitting in the back of the parking lot, like in my car with the light on, counting candy corn. And we had the system set up, like, you know, you count how many candy corn, and you also count them, and then we'll compare numbers and see if anyone's off. And I kept eating them, but it was perfect because we had their jar, so we know how many they think they have, and they had our jar, so we know how many they actually have. So we go back to the betting table the next day, because a lot of time is passing here, mind you. I need to stop paying for these talks. I never go to my. Stick around with the candy corn. But you're supposed to put money down, like $5, and then you count your number, and whoever's closest gets the thing. So we're like, okay, we got $15, there's three of us. We all want to pick the same number. And he's like, he looked at us like we're insane, like, you can't do that. We're like, no. We all need the same number. You understand me? He's like, he just kind of stared at me, and I'm like, okay, look, I'm gonna give you this much, and I slid an extra 20 across the table. We need his number. And to his credit, I'm sure he put the 20 in the Torricon Foundation thing. But he just looked at us like we were absolutely insane and put us, and sure enough, he put us all on one, thing. And the spreadsheet looked so conspicuous as hell because there's all these amounts all over the place. And then just this one line that has three names on it, right? For this one amount. Then everyone, and you can see people walk over and look at the amount, look at us, look at the amount and go, holy crap, that's weird. So at the end, but at the end, when they were announcing the actual value in the thing, Gio, who's one of the conference organizers, actually announced the wrong number. And we're like,
what the hell?
Wait, that's not right. Yeah, we stepped up and we're like, you have the wrong number. He's like, how do you know? And then Jolly has the actual jar and holds it up, and the whole place just started breaking out laughing. And we never did get to the bottom of why their number. It wasn't even, like, kind of off. It was off by, like, 200 candy corns. It was bizarre. It was like twice.
Are you sure you had the right jar?
Oh, we had the right. No, we had it down perfectly. It was. They just miscounted. Because the value in their jar and our jar ended up being close to the same because the candy corn was the same and the volume of the jar was the same. But they were off by some amount that couldn't even fit in the jar. I mean, it was impossible. I'm perhaps sure they just guessed and. Did that, but long story short, now that I remember it, Gio owes me and Jolly like a free Torricon pass or something, but I thought that was pretty clever.
So they actually, you know, applauded you for your sneakiness.
Yeah, they actually it's a hacker conference.
So your underhandedness paid off.
Quite literally, that's how we did the switch. We had Jolly was walked up with the candy corn situated under one hand and managed to do the switch that way.
So this is the only time or only con in the world that you can actually get applauded for your creativeness of stealing candy corn.
That's right.
Okay, all right.
It was fun.
All right, good. Good times.
Anyway, this took longer than I thought it was because the stories ran long, but I actually need to run out of here, so let's wrap the show up.
Oh, jeez, you're leaving me hanging here. All right, fine.
Oh, yeah. I really failed this weekend.
Yeah, you failed. You're sitting by the pool and, you know, hanging out and crap.
So what is your topic going to be next week? And the topic that couldn't be done in time
I am not
going to
announce it. I'm going to save that for next week. Because I actually have two ideas, and I have one fleshed out, sort of, kind of. And then the other is I thought of while we were doing the show today, this week. So, all right, so we'll talk next week then.
Okay, I'll see you next week.
All right. Now these points of data make a beautiful people.
I need to plug the website, hackradiolive.org. Go there, sign up for things. The show notes are great.
What happened to the .com?
I own them both. I own a bunch of domains. I covered our bases here.
And also, yes, also plugging, you know, most of our listeners coming from hackerpublicradio.org.
That is true. Plug that. What's the address?
www.hackerpublicradio.org.
Good place to go. I recommend you go there and then go to the other site. That's better.
Oh, okay. Well, hey.
I'll see you next week. I can't hear you. I can only hear you next week.
Fine. All right.